As high performers, we see the world differently. In a world that not only tolerates but promotes mediocrity, who do we turn to when we want to be great? Where are the guides? What's the blueprint? This podcast gives you access to the most successful people from around the world so that you can elevate every area of your life. This is more than just about making money. It's about living a life that lights you up so that you can illuminate the world. Welcome to Elevate. I'm Jack DeLosa. Let's get into it.
This is so profesh. This is profesh. Starts off Candy motherfucking Williams. So professional.
And as we discussed, I'm waiting for that term of respect and endearment to be reciprocated.
For me to say it to you?
Correct.
Jack motherfucking DeLosa.
There we go.
There it is.
We're talking about inner child work and how it's the next frontier for a lot of work, for a lot of people that want to go deeper into their personal development work. And so on that, what I was just explaining to Katie that I'm going to bring you guys into this conversation now is, prior to me exploring inner child work, so Katie and I are quite similar in that, Katie, you come from a background of challenge, right? You seek out challenges. And yeah, that's what inner child work is, right? Because it's not fun.
We're not well. We're not well people, yeah. We make life harder sometimes. Yeah.
But in doing so, we make life better. And so what I thought it was going to do was kind of almost like give me more accuracy in how to judge myself. But what it actually did is, when you put the inner child work under the kind of microscope, is you start to realize where all of your patterns come from. Mm. And that gives you an empathy for yourself. And so it's actually like, so this pattern that I'm running that I don't love about myself, that's where it comes from. And this is how I can change that going forward. And so whereas I thought it was going to help me be more self-critical, like accurately self-critical, it actually made me significantly more compassionate with myself,
yeah,
and therefore compassionate with others.
There's this thing on TikTok. So I actually haven't done any inner child work.
Yeah.
But you've just said to me off camera that you're going to give me a book to read. And I really, yeah, want to do inner child work because I know that's like the next thing to do. I'm going to do Spiral, which will completely unravel my life. And then I want to do inner child work. There's this thing on TikTok where it's like a trend, which we can probably find for people listening or watching. We can probably find a video or leave a link. But on TikTok right now, there's people talking about when they look in the mirror and they say something negative about themselves.
Mm.
They pull up a photo of them as a kid and they say, you're actually speaking to her or him.
Yes.
So every time you say, you're shit, you're not enough, you should be working harder,
yes,
or you've made a massive mistake, or there's probably a lot more critical words than that.
Yes.
You're actually speaking to that little person in yourself, and you,
yes,
would never speak to a five-year-old like that.
Yes.
So that's like such a big lesson. Even if you don't do inner child work, every time you speak negatively about yourself, you actually are speaking to your inner child who probably needs a hug or some compassion.
1,000,000%. And inner child is really just a metaphor for your unconscious mind, right?
Mm.
And you're right, self-talk goes straight to the unconscious mind, and so we absorb it just like a child would. And so the reason why we all carry stuff from childhood is, from 0 to 7 is the imprint period, right? Where everything that happens around you or that you see and that you model in the people around you goes straight into your unconscious because you haven't developed the filters yet.
No.
And so it's so formative in terms of the thought patterns, the behavioral patterns, the communication patterns that we're all playing out as adults. It's phenomenally eye-opening and amazing to see just how many of them come from that 0 to 7 and then 7 to 18.
And then you start doing therapy and you realize that everything you've learned as a child from your parents and the world around you probably needs to change, because a lot of the time that like critical voice or your beliefs aren't yours. Like, so much is conditioned in us, and so much of who we are right now, which is really confronting, is not actually who we are. It's the mask that we have on. It's how that we show up, and it's actually not our true selves. And I feel like that's the hard thing about therapy, because you think you know yourself and then you spend like 6 years doing it and you're like, wow, all I've actually done is unlayer. Like, I haven't actually learnt more. I've actually like delayered who I think I am. And usually it comes back to, like, for me, I feel like the last few years I've learnt who I am so much more, because I've actually just stripped back the layers and I'm actually more like what I was like when I was a kid. Like I was such a tomboy when I was a kid. I was like really unfiltered. I was really open-hearted before the world made me hard. And then like, so it's almost like the more work you do, the younger you kind of feel in a way, because you have curiosity again. You're more creative. Like you're willing to take risks. Like you don't care what people think about you. That is like your inner child at 5 years old or 8 years old. Like the world hasn't shut you down yet. Everyone's encouraging you. You're painting. You're being free. You wear whatever the fuck you want. And then as you get older, people go, show less skin. Don't get tattoos. Stop swearing. Like you start to become smaller and smaller to fit this stupid world, this stupid view that society thinks you should be.
Yeah, it's a return to your authentic self.
Yes. I love that.
You said something really profound in amongst all of that, which is the last few years has been that kind of unraveling and 6 years of therapy has brought you back to your true self. Who is Katie Williams at her true self?
I actually had this conversation with Georgia, my partner, on the weekend because we had some like, we had an emotional weekend together, speaking about a relationship, like what's not working, what's working. And I can often revert to like when I'm triggered or threatened is this like, I can go into like my ego self, which is like, people probably wouldn't notice that I get go into that state, but like with G, she doesn't give a shit like what I do, what clothes I wear. Like she just wants me to be like happy and free and fun. But I guess like as soon as you're triggered, or for me when I'm triggered, it's really easy to not be like happy and free and fun. It's really easy to get like protective and tough and then like shut people out. So the question you asked about me was how I've changed or who the real version of me is. I think now, being like I've had to come out in the last like 2 years, you know, I'm not hiding any part of me anymore. Like the world knows that like I'm in a same-sex relationship. I hid that for a little bit and I wasn't showing up as my authentic self. I also hid.
In your defense, that was a super little bit. That was like a couple of months type thing. Like you.
It was like, it was probably like a year and a half knowing that like.
Sure.
I don't really love labels. So it's kind of.
Yeah.
I don't love labels, but like, I guess I kind of identified then as bi.
Right.
I still now don't really love or attach myself to any kind of label. I just like am who I am and I happen to be in the same sex and I love her and we're hopefully going to get married. But like, I don't know what will happen in the future. If she ends up with a guy, if I end up with a girl or a guy, like whatever. I love her now and I hope that that stays.
For sure.
But the labels for me feel, they don't really feel like comforting. I kind of just feel like I just want to be me. I don't want to be the gay girl or the bi girl. I just want to be me.
And so what was going on for you during that 18 month period that you're sort of saying there was that
before
delay?
People knew?
Well, yeah, because my sense and maybe I interpreted this incorrectly, but knowing you during that period, my sense wasn't necessarily that it felt like the main reason you weren't sort of talking about it openly necessarily was because it was almost like a disregard for the label. It was like, well, who really cares?
Yeah.
About the and so it was it felt like that was the primary driver. It didn't feel like you were hiding your true essence. And maybe even misinterpreted.
Probably because I trust you. So like there was a few people that knew that I was kind of like dating guys, dating girls, but like it was not because I had just done television. The media didn't know.
Yes.
And then my extended family didn't know. Right. So there were people that I knew that I was like, so I really trust you. Like we know each other. We have a personal relationship.
Yes.
So there were people that knew that I trusted. And I also know that people like you're a very open-minded person.
Yeah.
You like are accepting and loving of many people. Totally. And you're also very emotionally intelligent. So I kind of like, you know, my nan who's like super Catholic didn't know at that point.
Sure.
Probably wouldn't understand if I said, hey, I'm dating guys, I'm dating girls. I don't know what I am. She'd be like,
yeah, so must have label that fits the dogma.
Must put you in a box. Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I've already done the whole box thing because I was a professional athlete for so many years of my life. Like I competed for, I was in my sport for 19 years and I competed full time for 10 years.
Yeah.
So I kind of did all that. I've had my identity with that. I was really conscious of not, with my sexuality, this not being my full identity again, which is why, well, you know, I've been vegan, I've been a professional athlete, I've whatever jobs I've done, I've never wanted it to be my label. So obviously now I still identify as an athlete because I'm athletic and I still have lots of challenges that I'm going to do. But same thing with the sexuality. Like, I don't want to be the athlete, the gay girl. Like, I just want to be me.
Yes.
I fall in many different boxes.
Yeah.
I hope
I'd say Katie Williams doesn't fall in any box.
She's our circle.
I was thinking about this in the lead up to the conversation.
What box do you fit
you're
in?
You're just a fascinatingly unique, vibrant individual. You know, it's like some people it's hard to... Not that we should even attempt to, but you don't fit in many boxes. And I mean that as the most beautiful compliment.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, that's good. I don't want to be in a box.
No, and you absolutely should not be in any kind of predetermined or prejudiced category that might help others feel comfortable by putting a label. Like, all of that's bullshit. You said something really interesting there that I actually hadn't considered, which is in that period you'd just been on television.
TV, yeah.
So you'd just done Big Brother.
Mm.
That adds a whole nother layer.
Yeah.
Because I feel like when you've got that level of visibility and fame, let's call it, that's a whole nother layer of
pressure
and scrutiny. Mm. And whereas when one is sort of expressing things that are true and vulnerable about themselves, when you're doing so in friends and family, you can kind of choose who you talk to, and you talk to this person because you know they're going to get it, and maybe I'll talk to Nan in a couple of years' time because she's probably not going to. But when you're that visible, knowing how often emotionally unintelligent people and comments can be online in particular.
Horrific.
Horrific.
People are very mean and rude.
And so that must have been, like, I'm just getting goosebumps thinking and talking about this. That must have been incredibly courageous for you to come out in such a visible position. Hey team, I hope this conversation is resonating with you deeply. If it is, post it up over on Instagram, tag me at Jack DeLosa so that I can regram you and stay connected with you over on that platform. Do that now. Enjoy the rest of the episode.
The interesting thing about my, I guess, like, coming out was the reason why I bit my tongue for a while was because I got really badly trolled. So when I was on Big Brother, at that point, I was struggling with my sexuality. I was like kissing a girl and like hanging out with a girl before the show. And I also, like, I kind of just didn't know what I was. Like, and I still don't, I know who I am, but like, sexuality is not something that you can just pinpoint to an exact moment.
No.
It's not something that I believe can truly be boxed and stayed there. I think it constantly evolves. I think it's very fluid and it's very dynamic. So during my time on reality TV, when I was like in Big Brother, I was really struggling with my sexuality. And I was like, I'm going to use this time as downtime because my life is chaos and busy. So I was like, I'm going to use this as downtime. This, I can't, like, the outside world's nuts for me. Like, in this game, I can just chill. Was not the case at all.
No.
So I thought I could like sort my head out whilst I was on television.
Yeah.
Rookie error. I've then like come out of the house. It's gone on, like, it's live on television. All the Facebook forums are blowing up. I've got girls in my DMs. I've got guys in my DMs. I've got people asking me what my sexuality is, what's going on. And the reason that happened was because I teamed up in the show with a gay girl who's beautiful.
Mm.
And we were just friends, truly just friends. Mm. But that sparked, you know, that sparked massive rumors. Like, she's a tomboy. They must be gay.
Mm.
And at this point, I obviously knew that I wasn't straight, but I wasn't ready to tell people because they didn't know what I was. Mm. So then when I've kind of got my first taste of trolling, it was just like constant questions. Like, I even got asked on a podcast straight up a few times about my sexuality. And I'm like, you want me to come out on your podcast? Like, who do you think you are? Mm. So there were so many moments like that where I was like, wow, everyone wants an answer from me. So I just kind of like took a step back. And then obviously I met Georgia. And at the point when I met Georgia, I was like, I'm never going to date a girl. Like, yeah, I'll probably talk to people about it. Maybe you'll get out in the media, but like, I'm not going to date a girl. And then I met G and I was like, okay, I'm in serious trouble here. She just floated in. I met her at a party and I was like, oh my God, like, it's you.
Yeah, I'm done.
So, and then I was, then I felt proud, and I also felt like, well, I've met this beautiful girl.
Mm.
The process of coming out was for me a natural progression of being in a relationship.
Mm.
But the media also got hold of it too. So like it was just all kind of full on at the time. But I'm grateful for like all of it. And I definitely feel like so supported. But there was a big period of time where I didn't, which I believe would probably be a lot of people's stories as well.
One of the things I love about you is you're super conscious and intelligent. And so you examine things and you observe things and you build sort of clarity around how you view something and how you approach something and therefore how you're able to communicate something. And so what did you do during that period to navigate it as well as possible? And I imagine it wasn't always... Well, it was often not roses and butterflies and conscious Katie. I'm sure there was down moments and periods of what the fuck's going on.
100%.
But through all of the ups and downs, the good and the bad, what was navigating that challenging period like for you? And what tools were you employing, for lack of a better term, to navigate it?
I'm very blessed because about 6 years ago, I met a lady called Anne-Marie, who is based out of Mona Vale. It's called Purify Wellness. And she does Reiki, shamanic work, kinesiology, and kind of like a bit of psychotherapy. Like, she's just incredible.
Awesome.
So she helped me a lot when I first started with her. I actually started with her when I was going through a breakup with a guy, and the relationship was really toxic. And I felt like I needed therapy to let go of parts of that relationship and him. So I started with her, and then a few years later, she kept like telling me, you got to be your authentic self, like start, like you must be your authentic self. And I was like, what is this lady on about? Like, what do you mean? I am my authentic self. Like, I'm doing everything. Like, I was with a management team that were really strict. They, you know, wanted me to tell them what I was wearing, what my hair color was. Like, I wasn't allowed tattoos, and like, I wasn't being myself. So I started really delayering and being who I was. And I did it for so long. And then she just kept pushing this message, like, be your authentic self. And I was like, I don't know how much more I can do. Like, I was getting quite annoyed. And then one day I came to her and I was like, I walked in and I was like, I slept with a girl. And she was like, oh, there it is. And I was like, what? She was like, I've been telling you this for years. So like, it was funny because obviously she's psychic and stuff, but they're not allowed to give you any information that interrupts your destiny. So it's always more subtle messaging. But I have been seeing her, and I have a few other coaches as well, but she's kind of like my main girl.
Mm.
She helped me a lot. I would speak to her about like, you know, how do I tell my mum, but like, what are the fears around me telling my mum? What are the fears around the media finding out? You know, what does love mean to me? You know, love. And I then obviously did my own reflection on, you know, love doesn't have a gender. Love for me is, you know, a feeling of safety and connection and intimacy, which can come from, you know, self-love. It can come from any person that you fall in love with, you know, can be relationship, can be family member, can be your babies. So I really redefined what love meant to me. And then a lot of the time, truly the most simple approach I had was I had to just lead with my heart in every way. I had a lot of negative self-talk. I had a lot of talk that wasn't mine. I had a lot of beliefs that weren't mine. A lot of the internalized homophobia that was running through my mind wasn't mine. So I would think something and then I would write down that belief and then I would question it. So like there was lots of times where I did feel shame about being with a woman, but I very quickly realized that none of that shame was mine, because at my true self, I know my core is loving and accepting and kind. But my ego self gets involved and I can be a bit narcissistic. I can be stubborn, set in my ways. But if I kept coming back to like, who is my true self? What is my higher self trying to tell me? What is my heart trying to tell me? All the decisions I made around my sexuality were intuitive and heart focused. And for someone, as you know, you've seen me for years, I'm pretty comfortable in my masculine. So I really had to tap into my feminine energy and trust that like, whatever happens, if we break up and I've come out in the media, it hasn't been a waste. Like, do you know what I mean? I had to just trust and surrender that what I was feeling was my heart guiding me and not my head. So to be honest, it was a lot of reflection, a lot of journaling, a lot of therapy. And like everyone always asks me, you're so good like about your sexuality. Like how are you so good about it? Hey, how do you feel so good? Because I questioned everything, like every thought and belief around my sexuality, I would talk to my therapist with and I would debunk it. And every time the evidence never added up to my actual beliefs. It was always what the environment around me was telling me was right or wrong. And like your body knows, man. Like if you're kissing a girl and you feel great, like don't let your head get involved. You know what I mean? Like your heart is saying this feels right, this feels good. So it's always, I feel like, go with what feels right and where your heart leads you. Lead with your heart, not with your head.
And to the question around, you know, how you know, you just seem to be doing it so well and all that sort of stuff, you did the work. You did the challenging work. Like, and this is what I mean by your level of consciousness and awareness. You know, every time you have a thought, you write it down, examine it, unpack it. Where does it come from? Is it me? You know, that's how personal work is done in that uncomfortable moment. You have a thought, you'd rather skip over it and reach for the lollies or reach for a glass of wine or, you know, distract ourselves. Whereas you're, I, from my observation, you're somebody that leans into yourself and the work because you want to do that unlayering.
It's funny because it's kind of like almost an obsession with being like so analytical.
Yeah.
Because like whatever, like I recently got diagnosed with ADHD. So now I'm just like obsessed with ADHD. So it's like, it's kind of like, and the same thing with my sexuality. It was like, whatever I'm going through at the moment, it's like,
it's
kind of probably annoying to people around me, but it's like, it's this obsession with getting to the bottom of like what, like the core issue is, or like, I don't like gray areas, probably much like you. Like I like to find a solution. I don't like to be like, oh, it is what it is. Like, I'm like, why?
Yeah.
Why is it? So it's, I think with the sexuality stuff, there is a lot of surrender, but anytime I had any kind of like homophobia, which I didn't really have a lot, but if I had some in there, which a lot of people do, it's really under the surface. I would figure out where it's coming from. And you know, like I grew up Catholic and there was a lot of reasons why. But I think it's really important to, you can't have any level of homophobia within you if you're going to wholeheartedly step into a same-sex relationship, because it's not fair on the other person.
Mm. Or yourself.
Yes, true.
Hey team, I hope this conversation is resonating. Sometimes when we learn things like these, we can immediately think of others that we wish were here hearing this very conversation that you are now. If that's you, share it with that friend, share it with that family member, share it with that loved one that you wish could be learning from this episode as well. They will thank you for it. Another thing that's fascinating about you is you were a professional sprinter athlete, both nationally and internationally. And what I've observed from, you know, 20 years in business is often people that come from sport, particularly the higher the level they've operated, the more this is true, is that there's a discipline and there's a pursuit and there's a commitment to excellence that translates so incredibly. You know, you've been super successful in business, with podcast, with your personal brand. How much of what do you think were the strengths and the capabilities you developed through being a professional athlete, and how have they translated to the other fields that you've subsequently gone into and been successful in?
I think one of the best attributes to an athlete is the ability, or a great athlete, is the ability to be coached and mentored. So like I had amazing coaches when I was training full time, and I still like my first coach, I have had a quote that he told me tattooed on me when I was, and I got it when I was young. Like that's how much he meant to me.
What's the quote? He knew it was coming.
It's like the worst thing ever, but it's not. At the time it was cool, but now every single person in Australia has it. It's carpe diem, lol.
Oh, beautiful.
Seize the day. So funny. I think I was like 16 when I got it, but my coach would tell me these quotes, and he was very philosophical. And for me, like now since I retired, I've never not had a coach. I've never not had mentors and people to like guide me and to help me along the way in all different aspects. So for me, I think like with every part of my life, I will try and find a coach or an expert that I can learn off and that can guide me. The other thing about training full time is like my time management is not good. It's the ADHD, but I am pretty productive because I've had to learn how to structure out my days and my time. So one thing that I do now is color coding, which I was kind of doing it when I was training full time. I just wasn't doing it with colors. I was structuring my day. So when I was training full time, I was at TAFE, I was at uni, I was working, doing photo shoots, and I was training full time. Like it was a mess, but I did it and I was still able to do it. So now I have a lot more free time, which is great, but I have learned to structure my time in a pretty great way to be able to fit in my training. And I think for me, like in my business and what I do, if I don't exercise, I'm not myself. Like when I'm training cognitively, I'm fast, I'm strong, I feel more confident. So having that level of discipline to keep my training up consistently is why I'm able to perform at work as well. But going back to like structuring my day, which is what I did when I was training, I break my day up and then I time block. So I'll do like in the morning, I wake up, I'll meditate, I'll journal, make my bed, declutter. And then I will write out like important tasks, like what's due. I have a few different lines of work, I guess. So sometimes the day can be like, look really hectic until I color code it and chunk it up. So I'll look at like my priorities, what's important, what are the deadlines? And then I will grab like 5 different highlighters. So when I look at the end of the week or I look at the end of the day, I'm looking for the colors of the rainbow. And for me, that means I'm balanced. So to give you an example, yellow highlighter is work. Purple is podcasts. Green is like side hobbies slash other work that's not bringing me in cash yet, but like side things. Blue is training. And then I've got pink for socializing. And then orange is like self-care, life admin. So obviously, there's a few things that I'm balancing there. But if I'm like struggling financially, I need to look at like what's going on here. Am I not focusing on the money makers? If I'm struggling like because I'm feeling disconnected or feeling like I need more family or friends time, I might not see any pink in my journal. So I love that, you know, being an athlete, I learned how to like fit a lot in my day and structure a lot. And that has come through in my work. And also the discipline to keep training or to keep like moving forward, like keep progressing.
Yeah.
And also to chunk. So like set like a goal that seems kind of hectic, but then know like history has shown that I can do it because I have worked with coaches, I've had support, I've had a good like structure in my day that I've been able to do like these kind of like really ambiguous goals, but I've been able to like break it down and structure it into like daily habits, weekly goals, monthly milestones, and then boom, you've made it. So I think like having that level of like structure and discipline definitely follows through, but there is a negative. The negative of being an athlete, or I guess like a high performer, is for me, I was a massive perfectionist and extremely self-critical. And this was my downfall in my relationship to self. So like being a perfectionist or like looking at all the 1%ers all the time, which is what you have to do as an athlete, you analyze how much water you drink, you analyze your sleep, you analyze like every race, every time, everything is data. It disconnects you from feeling like you're good enough because you're always focusing on what needs improving. So this might be relevant to people listening at home who have a high-performing job or they have like crazy KPIs. It's important to appreciate the small things that you're doing, the person that you're becoming, and celebrate the little wins, because if you're only looking at data and goals and how you're like winning, you're actually not winning because you're fully not enjoying it and you're fully stuck in the rat race. So it's a balance of having self-compassion, feeling like your confidence isn't being slayed because of these unrealistic expectations that you set for yourself. So it's a really fine line of like of balancing those two. That was a long answer.
I love it. That was a perfect answer. Jung spoke about this. He spoke about how many people, we develop a persona.
Mm.
And you go through a life of developing a persona, building a persona, and then often you get to a point where the next chapter is unraveling and kind of taking off that persona and coming back to authentic self. And at that point, we tend to demonize the persona, which you're not doing right now. It's more just of a sort of anthropological pattern that occurs. Is you come out of the persona, you demonize the persona. What Jung said is the persona is actually a good thing because you need it to build your initial identity and to differentiate yourself from the rest of the world. So, you know, the guy in his basement playing video games 12 hours a day and doing nothing with his life is there because he doesn't have a persona. He doesn't have an identity with which to interact and interface with the world. And so your persona was, I'm a successful athlete, I'm data-driven, I will measure what matters in order to get my outcomes.
Mm.
And then in the recent years, it sounds like there's been a softening back to your authentic self and away from that initial persona.
I think like who I thought I was, because everyone was like validating me and celebrating me and like...
The world loves the persona.
Yeah, but yeah. Guess who hates it? Your partners. Yeah. So like Jean will like see me like getting back into like ego and she's like...
Who's that?
I don't care. Like, don't care. Like, she's like, clean the fucking dishes. Like, do you know what I mean? She's like, I don't care how you, like, no, you don't care. But I'm like, look, babe, this video's gone viral. She's like, people on the internet care about you. I'm like, oh, shit. Like, do you know what I mean?
So
it's so easy to revert back to this, like, and it's hard because you do have to step into, like, you, like, I'm a podcast host as well. And you have to step into this persona because, like, fuck, I've had the most emotional few days. I felt so crap.
Mm.
But like, I can't just get on here and like really like let it all out. Like you've got to work. You've got to be able to like mask. You've got to be able to put your feelings aside sometimes. So I guess that's kind of what's hard is like when you are the face of your brand, there isn't really a lot of time for you to have a day off.
Yeah.
And I've become really good at that.
Yeah.
And I became you've very
good at switching on.
Good at that. Yes. Yeah, switching, yeah. You know, you do tend
being
to like put
to
that
be.
Hat on. And yeah. Now I'm trying so hard to just not mask anything and to really try and like if I'm having a shit day, just like own it. Don't try and pretend you're fine because you're not and it's okay.
Mm.
And to actually, for me, it's been an interesting shift of just like masculine and femme energy, like because for so long I really neglected the feminine energy.
Yeah.
Being like an athlete, your whole like you've got to be tough and strong and whatever, but really you're not. You're every human feels, and I'm a big feeler, so it's just been a real like softening and accepting that I'm just not tough, actually. Like, I'm really emotional.
Like, so
but I had this real tough girl image for a really long time.
Mm.
And that was just a big mask for a lot of my insecurities.
Hey team, I hope this episode is resonating with you deeply. If it is, please leave a review on this podcast to help us spread the message even further to the people who might need to hear it. One of the things that's really evident, sort of having known you and watched your journey, is you do have an ability to keep showing up, which is kind of what you were just saying. And I don't necessarily mean showing up for a podcast. I mean continually pursuing your own challenges and engaging in life fully, regardless of how hard it might get. Where do you think that grit and resilience comes from for you?
My mum. Nice. Yeah. My mum is like the most incredible woman in so many ways.
Mm.
She is so tough that like if she's in a crisis, you throw a brick at her, she'll catch it.
Mm.
And she'll throw it back at you. Mm. And she'll go hit me again. Like my mum is so resilient. Like nothing's going to bring her down, you know? Like I know some of it is like a front, but I truly have seen her overcome so much and be really fearless and courageous. And she's taught me how to set boundaries and to not take too much shit. My dad's the opposite. My dad is a bit more like, everyone loves him. He's like, fits into everything. He's the best, but he doesn't have very strong boundaries. And he can fall very much into people pleasing and making everyone comfortable. So it's an interesting balance. I have a bit of both in them. I have a bit of both in me.
You.
But it would come energy. From my mum. Yeah. And Georgia. Georgia's very resilient. Extremely. She's like 5'2", but she's like a weapon.
I still remember you coming into my office and telling the team about Big Die Energy.
Big Die Energy? Seriously, that's what she's known for, Big Die Energy, all my friends. None of this Big Dick Energy, it's Big Die Energy.
And Katie's mum's name being Die,
Big Die Energy. Yeah, she's tough. She's a trooper. Yeah, she's on me. She's on my arm. And then so is my other girl.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Yeah, that's super beautiful. Cute. And so what's going on in your world now? What is the current and the next chapter look like for you?
Well, Maddie, who's sitting behind the camera here.
The man, the legend.
The man, the legend. Him and I are working on a brand called the 10K Club, which is really exciting. Hopefully, the long-term plan is to turn it into an app. But at the moment, it is a 10K running program, getting a community together. It's definitely for busy people who want to start living with some vitality and start to learn the basics of running. The goal of the first program is to get people to run 10K in 10 weeks for $10 a week. The next step will be getting people to do a half marathon and then a full. And then we can also digress into a 5K, which could be suitable for kids. And then I want to do a disability run program. So that's like where I want to see, like, obviously I've got an audience from the podcast, my Instagram, my TikTok. I'm doing a different show as well. So I'd love to now, like I've made a lot of brands money and given them exposure. So I kind of feel like now I would love to turn, you know, my followers into a community that is active. We're getting them moving. And I kind of just want to like keep creating health programs, lifestyle programs, self-development programs to feed that audience. So yeah. And then all the other stuff that I do at the moment, like podcast is coming back, which is exciting. I'm doing a podcast with my best friend, which is like super rogue, which will be fun.
That's so cool.
And then yeah, everything else with like social media and stuff's doing really well. Content, like, work's just like flowing in, which is amazing. But I'm injured at the moment, so it's been like, that's the one thing that's been really tough, is like physically my body is healing right now. Yeah.
What are you most excited about as you look forward?
I think, like, to be honest, building a brand from scratch, not from scratch because I have an audience and I'm very blessed, but like learning from Matt, I think this is going to be massive. Like I've got like such a great mentor. I've obviously known Matt for like 5 or 6 years, and I feel like it's now our time to really like give this a red hot crack.
So yeah. Good.
I just love it. I'm like, let's go. Let's find all the solutions to all the problems. Like let's hit it.
let's hit it. Katie Williams, you are such an incredible and inspiring human being, you know, witnessing your journey and being lucky enough to have a long-term friendship with you at this point. You know, you are the embodiment of someone that shows up, does the work, and continues to shine so brightly. And I know how much work goes into that. So thank you for being you. Keep shining and we'll keep talking.
Thank you so much. Finally, we got here.
I know.
It's such an honor.
That took us.
I know.
Is this the first time we've done this?
Yeah, but I've known you for like, how long have I known you for?
A while now. A
few years. Yeah.
So, yeah, I can't believe it. Because I suppose we've done this a lot. We've done lots of talking. Cameras.
Just know. Yeah, we probably could have had some good moments if we brought the mic out over a few Chablis. Yeah,
you're talking my language. I love it. Katie Williams, thank you so much.
Thank you. Cheers. I need to say Jack motherfucking DeLosa.
You absolutely need to say that.
Oh, 100%. Thanks, man. I loved
it. Put it on the record.
We'll get you on my show next.
All right.
Thanks, boss.
Love you.
Hey team, thanks for listening. I hope this episode resonated deeply with some part of you. To ensure you don't miss out on any future breakthroughs, take a second right now and hit the subscribe button. While you're at it, head over to Instagram, connect with me there, @JackDeLosa. I look forward to speaking with you soon.